Okay, we left off in our life study. We left off here and we had gotten down through verse 26. But I want to drop back a couple of verses in Acts 23 and pick up here because we got down to where this young nephew of the Apostle Paul said, Paul, when he showed up, they were somewhere between Jerusalem and the temple over there, and I guess he had come looking for Paul, and these people were after Paul, and they had made up their mind that they wasn't going to eat or drink anything until they killed Paul, and that was the wrong thing to ask or to say, because, you know, it was a situation that God had a big hand in, and it was going to go the way God wanted it to go. We'll just put it that way. And so I'm going to get back into the study, but it's an ongoing thing here, and these Jews had come from Asia about the same time that Paul left Ephesus and come back to the Holy Land. And, you know, I've been going through this thing, and we've been looking at the situations as to how Paul had changed ships two or three times before he got out of the islands of the Asian Providence over there, part of that deal. And so he had kind of gotten away from the ones that were after him, because that was the group that made the shrines of Diana. And he made all kinds of shrines, from the little ones that you could wear maybe on a necklace, and he made the bigger ones like you could have in a house or a building. And and so they saw that Paul's preaching and teaching was not good for them, and so he got all the people together that did all this kind of stuff. And for these idols and the idol worshipers. And so the chief captain carried Paul down before the council. He didn't know what, he was really in a quandary there. He didn't know what to do about, he didn't know why this uproar was going on. He just knew that these Jews were after this guy named Paul. And
it's going to cause me a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and he didn't want to get involved with all these big dudes from the Roman Empire. And he was there with 1,000 men. Now, I often ask myself the question, why did a man need to be between a city that God chose for the Israelites, or for the, to be in that area close to Egypt? And why would he need 1,000 men to guard a temple? And because they had uproars, and these Jews, they thought they had the man that started the uproar. But anyway, there was 1,000 soldiers there. And this young man, Paul's nephew, came in. And he kind of, I don't know if he just snuck in and didn't know where he was going or what. But anyway, he heard them talking about killing his uncle. And so he kind of snuck down and listened to what they were saying. So when he come and he found Paul, then he told Paul about it. They laying for you. And so Paul went to the, he called in the chief captain. There was over 1,000 men. He was over basically a large garrison of soldiers that were there for whatever reason, to keep peace. And I don't know, these people must have had a little fight in them because they seemed like they always wanted to fight. And so I'm going to go back to verse 18. And, well, I'll go to 17 because this is pretty easy reading because I'm going to read it out of my notes till we get to verse 20. And he said, then Paul called one of the centurions, this is a Roman, over a dispatch of 100 men. So if they were 1,000 there, so there was at least 10 centurions there. Unto him and said, bring this young man, talking about the nephew of Paul, unto the chief captain, full stop, for he has a certain thing to tell him. And then verse 18, it says, so he, the centurion, took him, the nephew, and brought him to, and the word to there in the Greek is the word pros, P-R-O-S, pros. The chief captain, and said, Paul the prisoner called me unto him and prayed me to bring this young man unto thee. Now, this is the centurion talking to the chief captain, who has something to say or to tell thee. Now, Paul the prisoner here, this was the title that the Apostle Paul cherished as one of honor for the rest of his life. And he felt it an honor to do that for God, that God wanted him to do. Amen. Praise God for people that were this way. And in verse 19, I've got the notes here. It says, this verse tells us something well of the chief captain. Well, all the Romans, I guess, weren't bad people. But they were in charge because they had beat everybody else in the world. Then the chief captain took him, the nephew of Paul, and that took there, or took him, in the Greek is epilembanomai. Took him by the hand and went or called him aside privately privately there. I didn't put the word down there, but it was appendage 104-2. This expression occurs many times in the first three Gospels, translated a part, aside, or suffereth, and inquired or asked to the young man, what is it that thou hast to tell me? Okay, verse 20, and he, the nephew, said, the Jews have agreed to, and agreed there in the Greek is suntithimai. And that means desired or wished or prayed. That thou, you wouldst bring down Paul tomorrow unto the council as though they would inquire or ask something, what of him more perfectly. Because the chief captain He didn't know what to do with him, and if he took him somewhere or took him before somebody else, he had to have some kind of explanation of what was going on here. And he couldn't, because he hadn't heard the rest of the story. So now we're going to get in to the rest of the story. Okay, verse 21. I'm going to read it out of the King James Version, and then I'm going to read my notes, because these people that did the notes on this English version of the Bible have done a good job basically of doing this somewhat. That we would you normally can't go to another Bible and get that much information, whether it be absolutely or not the truth. Okay. But let's go to verse 21. Let me go back and find where I'm at. Okay. It says, verse 21, I'm going to read the King James Version and then we'll read my notes. But do not thou yield unto them. Now this is the young man talking here. And that's full stop. For there they lie in wait for him of them more than 40 men which have bound themselves with an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him full stop again. And now are they ready looking for a promise from thee. He's talking about the chief captain. Okay, so back into our study now. 21. It says, but do not yield. And yield there, or not there, is the little word me, the preposition me, unto them full stop. Or be persuaded by. And that persuaded there is the word piatho. P-I-T-H-O. Piatho. For there lie in wait. And the lie in wait in the Greek is... Enidrio, for him of ek, out, and ek is the little word out from them, more than 40 men. Now, the reason that we have this more than 40 men, Paul had gone before the council. Now, the council was made up of 80 Jews and one high priest. I don't know if all of them were there, but they had a quorum. And in this quorum, there was a little more than 40 of them Sadducees, and the rest were Pharisees, which Paul said he was born a Pharisee. And so, the Sadducees, the one that didn't believe in resurrection, didn't believe in angels or whatever, they had a quota. They had more than half, a little more than half. My question is, if they were trying to live under the law, and the law was given by God, and they claimed to be people of God, why did they not believe in resurrection? And why did they not believe in angels? Because God, as Jehovah, as Melchizedek, or whoever he claimed to be at that time, to those people, he had knowledge, he had godly knowledge of everything that went on, because he was the fabricator of the earth. When God wanted something done, when Theos wanted something done, then Jehovah did it. He made it. That's what a fabricator is. When I got a job in Atlanta, Georgia, and went over there and went to work, and we built jigs for making bar joists and stuff, and they started hiring welders and all this to do the plant work. They sent 31 of us over to Lawberry and Aggie Laboratories, which sounds like a bad lawyer's office. And they were the ones that gave us our, the Navy guy was over there to give us our welding test. And when we got done, they said, "Cecil, you're the best one over there. You're the best welder we got." I said, "We're not going to use you as a welder all the time. We're going to make a fabricator out of you." And I said, "Okay, tell me what a fabricator is." I was just out of high school.
6 months ago, I couldn't spell a fabricator.
Right.
An hour or one.
Yeah. But now I know a little bit about what a fabricator is. We may talk about it sometime. But anyway, they had a quarrel, 40 men, which have bound themselves by a heathen curse. So they didn't believe in resurrection, but they carried some of the heathenistic stuff along with them as they went, evidently. So like by a heathen curse with an oath. So God requires an oath many times, because when he gave Adam dominion over the earth, when he made Adam and he started creating this stuff, he gave him dominion, but he also gave him things that he would have to do by an oath or with an oath. And that was part of the law. Part of that was built into the law. Because God did two different things with mankind, or humankind. One of them, when he made promises to these people, which he called his, he said, "If you will do this, or if you will keep this law, or do whatever he wanted done," he said, "if you will do this, I will do this for you." Now that's a kind of a trade-off. If you will, I will. So that's conditional. So it's not the other one. And the other one is, well, I'm going to do this for you, whether you want it or not. It's kind of like my dad. My dad always wanted to give me a lot of stuff that he thought was grand as far as information. And he'd give me something that I didn't want, but it didn't make any difference. He was going to give it to me anyway as long as I was with him. Yeah, if you will, I will. But some, I'm going to do it anyway, whether you want it or whether you don't. That's these people's situation. They could keep the law, or they didn't have to. But if they didn't do it, then they would have no hope, basically. Because there's going to be a standing up of these people. And they're going to be judged by the Father at the great white throne judgment. But they all won't be living. Some of them will be dead, but he can still stand them up, whether they're alive or dead. You know, the country music people, they got this thing about 11 bars so much as if I die, just stand me up beside the jukebox, you know. Put a little sand in my boots, I'd be all right. Well, there's nothing true to that. But nevertheless, they still come up with these sort of things, okay? An oath that they will never eat nor drink till they have killed him, full stop. And now are ready looking for, and that word looking for is the word prodekomea, or waiting for a promise from thee. This shows that some promise of a future trial for Paul have already been given. A further trial. So, they're not done with Paul here because they still haven't got the understanding. The chief captain has still not got the written word that he needs to send him to somebody else in the Roman Empire with authority more than the chief captain's got. Well, you'd think if the man was over 1,000 soldiers, there wouldn't be many people that would stand up to him, but they evidently they do. So verse 22. So we'll read 22 also. It says, so the chief captain then let the young man depart and charge him. Okay. And the charge here was, see thou tell no man what thou hast shown these things, that thou hast shown these things to me. He says, keep it under your hat, young man. I don't even know the nephew's name. It didn't tell me here. Or Paul's sister's name. I don't know yet. I would certainly love to have heard it. But so the chief captain, get into my notes. So the chief captain indeed then let or allowed the nephew to leave, to depart. And charged him and commanded him virtually. And in the Greek, that is paraangelio. I can pronounce that one pretty good, I think. See thou tell no man, no one. And in the Greek, that is ekleleo. That means no man, no one. That thou hast showed or signified these things unto me. So the chief captain now knows there's a plot out there against Paul's life, but he still don't know what for. You got that? You caught that? I mean, and he knows it's so bad that if they get a hold of him, they'll rip him apart. Because he said he thought in the beginning when he got Paul away from them that they were going to tear him asunder. You remember in the last study? And he said, man, what's this Paul got himself into? What is he doing to get these people all riled up about it? Verse 23. Let me go back to King James Version. And it says, and he called unto him 2 centurions. Oh, okay. Say, make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea, and horsemen 60, which is 70, and spearmen, 200 spearmen, at the third hour of the night, which would be about 9 o'clock. So I've almost told you generally everything that I made notes of in that verse of Scripture. But I'll go back and read it. And he, the chief captain, having called unto him two centurions. You know, a centurion is a man over 100, but the chief captain is over 1,000. So, the Roman leader of the army of the soldiers, 100 soldiers is a centurion, saying, and the chief captain says this, make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea or as far as Caesarea, and horsemen 70 and spearmen.
He took the 40-person threat pretty serious, didn't he?
Yeah. So he was taking about a third of his garrison to take one man somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, that's how bad he felt like it had gotten here. Now, when you read this, you know, do a little self-figuring here, and you can see that this was no distant, no company picnic.
No, that's a lot of nearly 400 people going
there. Right, and the Greek there for spearmen, which is people, I guess, walk along behind these horsemen and all to fight hand in hand, because the horseman has got a sword with him that he can fight up from the saddle, because he is above the fighting that goes on in the ground. Now, you know, you've seen enough television, you know, that there's people on horseback, then there's people walking with spears. Well, the people walking with spears, that's hand-in-hand combat.
Mm-hmm.
But the man up on the horse, he's got a little edge on these people because he's up higher than
470 people going in there.
Yeah. About height.
Yeah.
About height. Wow. And the spearman there in the word in the Greek is a dex alolobos. And that's what spearman means in the Greek. Those were light armed troops who were trained to fight hand to hand. The journey about to be taken was also of about 70 total miles. The Caesarea wasn't 70 miles. It wasn't but about 45 miles. So they're going to go to Caesarea and stop. And then they were going to refigure their deal. And then they were going to go on from there, because it's going to take them from 9 o'clock at night, which is the sixth hour, 9 o'clock at night till daylight the next morning to get to Caesarea and the 45 miles they were going to have to travel. So here we're talking about numbers and things that don't seem to make a lot of sense, but yet we're getting the picture here like a puzzle, piece by piece, sort of. And we're to leave the third hour of the night, 9 p.m., and no one could make a pursuit after this army after 9 p.m. because they didn't leave until then. And as soon as the army got out of the city, then the gates were locked and they couldn't nobody else get out of the city unless they went over the wall until the next morning. And when At 6 o'clock the next morning, they'd open the gates again. Now, this is not in Damascus, but it's pretty close, you know, to that area of the world. So no one could pursue after 9 p.m. Until 6 a.m. the next morning. And that was the reason they couldn't go, because I imagine as soon as this army, half of the garrison there, got out there, they slammed the gate shut up behind the last man, the last soldier that went out. And so the rest of the people were standing there with their mouth open looking. The ones that said they weren't going to eat nothing, they didn't get no supper that night.
Chico said there were 40 hungry and thirsty guys.
Yeah, or more.
Yeah.
Well, verse 24. And it says, and provide them beasts that they may set Paul on and bring safe unto Felix, the governor. Well, Felix had not been governor too awfully long, and Felix had a bad reputation. And so Paul was getting out of the frying pan and about to get in the fire. Now, this is how that God worked Paul, because Paul was doing exactly what God wanted him to do, and evidently did not question it. So God knew that he had picked the right guy, and he had. Boy, he had. So the chief captain had made arrangements to provide them beasts. And beast there, the word technos in the Greek, that they might set Paul on. And to set him on in the Greek is epidibezo, and bring him safe unto Felix, the governor. Now, Claudius had made him procure Judea in AD 52. And Josephus gives us many details of the stirring times of his rule and of his cruelty and treachery. Felix was a subordinate ruler known as governor. Felix, being a lieutenant of the procurator of Syria. So you see, Damascus is in Syria. Not Assyria, but Syria. And so he was in, they were over there a little ways, and so they had stopped in the morning or got a little rest the next morning before they could go, so they knew the people were 45 miles behind them. So they had made 45 miles that night. And that's a pretty good journey for a spearman to walk 45 miles between 9 o'clock at night and 6 o'clock next morning. That's 9 hours. Five nines is 45.
No army for sissies.
So they were going about 5 mile an hour, which if you make 5 miles an hour, that's a pretty good trot. Not a pretty good run. Well, they were pretty well trained, I guess. We'll just have to think about that, too, because all this together, you know, when we put it together and we try to think about what these people were doing and what they were going through with, and all this thing is, it's a stimulating story. Surely I would like to see it put into a movie sometime with somebody that really knew Scripture pretty well. Okay. The cruelty and treachery of Felix, he was a subordinate ruler, known as governor, being a lieutenant of the Propraetor of Syria here, governor. And he, the chief captain, wrote a letter after this manner, and governor in the Greek is the word hegemon. And I don't know what other, it might be what God had given to his people when he got them started off, like, because the deal between the Hebrew and the English is only two letters difference, but a lot of them are not said, like, because there's PH is in the English is dealt with as an F, and the word generally of a name that starts with a Y becomes an E, and it's just lots of things going on, because some of this was taken from Hebrew, some of it was taken from Latin, and some of it was taken from even from the heathen, because they had a heathen curse here, so this heathen curse had to be something that was from some of these people that were, we would consider to be heathens, you know. Verse 25 said, he wrote a letter after this manner, full stop. Now, Claudius Lysias was who he was writing this letter to. So, then, I don't know how this got to be Felix, but it did. Claudius Lysias. Claudius was the man, part of the family name. And then Lysias, I guess, was Felix in another name. He said, unto the most excellent governor, Felix. Oh, no, I'm wrong. Claudius Lysias was the chief captain. I'm sorry. I told you wrong on that. Because he's the one writing the letter. He's not going himself, but he's sending these 470 people with Paul.
He's the one that writes the fluffy letter, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, it's called...
Kind of jazzes up.
It's called, well, and he's kind of like some of our politicians. He'll
take credit
for some of it, but some of it he won't take credit for. He don't want to take credit for all of it.
My boss used to say, accept all accolades, deflect all blame.
Yeah. So Claudius Lysias was the chief captain. We found out what his name is, okay. And to the most excellent governor, Felix. And so he could call him an excellent governor, but I don't think there was anybody else around there that would that had anything much to do with Felix. Because it says, he was stirring times of his rule and of his cruelty and treachery. Felix was a subordinate ruler known as governor. Now, verse 26. It says, Claudius Lysias, chief captain, and to the most excellent governor, Felix, sendeth greetings. Verse 27. Okay, we're getting on down here. Let me get to 27. So this is, I guess this is what he said. This man was taken of the Jews and should have been killed of them, full stop. Then came I with an army and rescued him, having understood that he was a Roman. Well, he caught him up and was going to scourge him. He was going to whoop his butt.
You notice he appropriately left that out of the letter. Right?
Yeah, so you see, he wasn't going to tell the governor I was about to beat his butt.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to tell him how he got a hold of him, how he got him. Okay, this man.
A little, creative writing here.
Yeah, this man, Paul, was taken, having been seized of the Jews and should have been killed of them, full stop.
But I rushed in with my army.
He's the chief captain, writing it in third person here, I guess, as the proconsul legate. He was responsible for order in Jerusalem, and he had shown promptness and vigor, and moreover, kindly consideration for his prisoner. And in his letter, puts Paul, put Paul's case in a favorable light. Who certainly claims some credit for himself to which he was not entitled to, and says nothing about his proposing to scourge a Roman citizen. Oh, that would not go over big. But he stands far above Felix or even Festus, as and is entitled to rank with Julius. And I wrote, by the way, the most excellent there in the Greek is Caratatos, was an official title. Most excellent was Caratatos.
That's a good point, though. He did put Paul in a good light. Yeah. He's like, you know, I kind of saved this guy. And
yeah.
I don't know what the whole story is.
Well, but he's now beginning to think, well, he don't really deserve what he's getting.
Right.
Okay. And I think the young man really made an impression on the chief captain, to tell you the truth. To finish verse 27, then came I, and this is the chief captain talking with his letter, with an army and rescued him, having understood that he was a Roman. See, so he didn't say anything about no scourging. You know, I mean, we understand now by reading what Josephus wrote in some of this stuff, because Josephus had put it down pretty good, in pretty good terms there, and realizing that all this kind of hinged on the chief captain finding out, well, he did find out that he was a Roman citizen. Well, Felix don't really know this yet. And I got 10 minutes left. Okay, we'll get there. If we don't, we'll read the rest of the story next time. Like we did tonight. And verse 28 says this. Let me read it to you. And when I would have known the cause wherefore they accused him, I brought him forth unto their council. So he wanted to know, would have known means I wish to know, or I wanted to know, or maybe I asked to know, but he still ain't told him the reason. Only that he found out that they were waiting to kill him. When I would have known the cause. So he still ain't telling the man the cause. And I'm not sure that he really understands it. Because he's a Roman. He's a Roman soldier. He's not a... And you don't find many Romans that believed God in that day.
Or for that matter, I don't think a lot of them really cared or really, they were subjects to them.
Yeah.
They didn't really care about their customs and all their religions and all
that. That was just, that's just more work for them.
Yeah.
Look what he had to do here. Wishing to know wherefore they accused him. And he says, I brought him forth into their council. So he said, well, he may be a Roman citizen, but he's also a Jew. He's half Jew, half Roman. Okay. Verse 29. And it says, whom I perceive to be accused of questions of their law. That's what he was telling Felix. But to have nothing laid to his charge worthy of death or of bonds. So he had already kind of made a
I don't see no reason to hold him
a decision. He said they want me to charge him and want me to turn him loose to them so they can kill him, but he says, I've already made a decision. I don't think that he's deserving of that. In 29. So the chief captain had kind of found a little soft spot there somewhere. It says, whom I perceived or found him to be accused of questions. Let me see if I can questions there in the Greek. In clima. That's almost like inquired. In clima. Of their law.
But, Jews' law, not Roman law.
Yeah.
He broke no Roman laws. Yeah. They say he's broken Jewish law.
Yeah. But to have nothing laid to his charge as having no accusation worthy of death or bonds. Okay. We get to verse 30. And it says, and when it was told me how the Jews laid wait for the man, I sent straightway to thee and gave commandment to his accusers also to say before thee what they had against him. Farewell. So that's the end of the letter. See, so he says in verse 26, I send greetings. And in verse 30, he says, farewell. That's the end of the letter. So when it was told, literally a plot was revealed to me as about to be laid against the man, how that the Jews laid wait for the man, or against this man, and I sent straightway to thee, Felix, and gave commandment to his accusers also to say before thee what they had against him. Farewell. So these Jews were subjects of the Romans. So he could tell these Jews, you need to go to Felix now if you want to get your man. That's what he told him in the farewell of the letter. That's exactly the way he put it.
Okay? You got to plead your case before the higher court.
Yeah. So if anything is going to happen, it's going to be Felix's bag now. See, so when he just sent this letter with his soldiers, and his soldiers give the letter to Felix, and Felix read the letter, and this is what in verse 31. 31 said, then the soldiers, as it was commanded them, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. And that's the word of Felix's, or the one of the leaders there, family. And he named the town after his dad. So then the soldiers, as it was according to that which was commanded there in the Greek is diapasso, took Paul and brought him by night, this would be the next night, to Antipatris. This was a small town in the plain of Sharon, and I guess you've heard them talk about the Rose of Sharon, and this is the plain of Sharon, the fields and the pastures and all that. And it's about 35 miles from Jerusalem, and built by Herod the Great and named after his father, Antipater. On the morrow, they left, or permitted the horsemen to go with him and return to the castle. And when they came to Caesarea, verse 33, and when they came to Caesarea and delivered the epistle to the governor, presented Paul also before them. So you see, when the soldiers brought him to Felix, then they were basically done with him. But Felix said, well, now what am I going to do with him?
Well, I've got that letter.
Yeah.
Here's the letter, here's the guy.
Yeah, okay.
He's in your ball court.
When they came to Caesarea, delivered the epistle or the letter to the governor, presented Paul before him or to Felix. And when the governor had read the letter, this is verse 34. Most of this is just all stuff that you need to fill in to hear what went on. When the governor had read the letter, he asked of Paul what province he was from. And he understood that he was of Caesarea. Cilicia. Got one more verse. I'm going to read it anyway. This is the last verse of chapter 23. And Felix said, I will hear thee, said he, when thine accusers are also come. And Paul's birthplace of Caesarea was included in the province of Syria, and therefore in the jurisdiction of Felix. And he, Felix, commanded him to be kept or guarded in Herod's judgment hall. So he was taken to wherever Herod had made a judgment hall or a seat of judgment, which where he was like a king could hold court. because the king was basically the judge of some of these little old towns and providences and areas of things, and he could, whatever he said, become law. And that's like our cousin. It was that was got into it with King James, and James gave him a sentence of death because he couldn't agree with him on some of the stuff they were dealing with, and he was the Earl of Argyll, which is the area of Scotland. They've got an area in Scotland where they raise these special kind of sheep. These special kind of sheep has this wool that will really dispel water. And all of these shepherds got this Argyle wool and got these tent makers to make this wool for their cloak. That's the reason when Paul was telling Timothy in 2 Timothy to bring all this stuff to him, he said, bring me the parchment and the cloak. Well, the parchment was for them to keep, or the cloak to keep the parchment dry if they got into a rainstorm, which could have been that time, because this is where most of our hurricanes come from the Asian provinces there, and it comes across the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, that we call the Atlantic now. I don't know what it was called then. Part of that area over there was the Mediterranean, but when it comes across the ocean, then it builds up, generally hits Cuba or hits the United States or somewhere along, or maybe sometimes it goes on over and hits the coast of in the Pacific Ocean. It can go lower and miss maybe Florida altogether and go over down into Mexico that way, or the other end of the
tip of Texas
canal is the
Panama
Canal. There, Panama Canal. And so Herod's judgment hall. So this is one of the Herods. I don't know. I think it was Herod the Great that built the town.
So we got him all the way to Herod's judgment hall.
Yeah. So that's the end of that part of that story. So the chief captain and most of the army now has gone back. Now, Herod, Felix could keep some of them soldiers there probably to watch over Paul. And he might have left the centurion with him, because when he does finally get on the trip going toward Rome, because he is now going to say that I appeal unto Caesar. And so that's like you said, I'm going to appeal to the Supreme Court. And so it took him a long time to get to the Supreme Court, because there's another couple of 3 years here that he's going to be around. That's a good place to stop the story for this study. So, but we've got him in Felix's deal, and Felix is not going to be very good to Paul, because he already had a reputation. He was going to hold that reputation up. So, but Paul had some talk with Felix, and he got Felix and King too, and the king came to see him while he was there. And both of them got pretty close to believing God, but they didn't at that point. But here we are. And so, you know, God told Paul through the guy that prayed for him in Damascus that you will have to go before, take my word before men, before the Jews and before kings. So this is, one of them's a governor, the other one here is going to be a king.